Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Who covers every aspect of the NFL and does it very, very well on ProFootballTalk.com, is back with us right now. He's also an author, and he has a new book, Son of Mine, coming out. Also has a book, Father of Mine, among others. And he's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He's Mr. Mike Florio. Hello, Mike.
How you doing, Mike?
Mike, you with us?
I'm there. You here?
There we go.
Hello.
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 New book. Congratulations. Tell us about it before we get into the stadium stuff.
Well, you know, it's a sequel to Father of Mine, which came out last year, but it also stands alone. If you're not inclined to read Father of Mine, you can read Son of Mine. It'll spoil Father of Mine in many respects, but it can be read as a single experience, and I'm happy with it. I am very hard on myself about everything. I always think everything I do sucks, and most of the time I'm right. But in this case, I really do believe this is great. I love it. I just put the finishing touches on it over the weekend, and I just hope people will read it and enjoy it. And for $4.99, it falls into that category of you can't buy anything this cheap, and you'll get, I don't know how long it takes people to read, it's 400 pages. You'll get however many hours of enjoyment as it takes you to read 400 pages. You can read it fast, you can read it slow, but it's 400 pages, so it works out to, what, a couple of cents a page, if that much. It's a pretty good bargain.
And it's out when?
September 3rd. You can pre-order now, though, on Amazon for $4.99 for the ebook. We'll have a print edition available as well on September 3rd.
Outstanding. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, interesting question for Mike. What made you go from reporting on the NFL and writing Playmakers, which was a really great read all about the NFL, into finding your way into fiction writing?
Well, Playmakers was part of the pivot for me because it occurred to me at some point along the way, and I've done the math, I've written over 20 million words over the last 23 years at PFT, and everything I write today, by tomorrow, nobody cares. And everything I write tomorrow, by the next day, nobody cares. And I wanted to start spending some time writing things that would have relevance beyond the next 24 hours, if they even have relevance in those 24 hours. Playmakers has a little more of a landing strip, a little more of a runway, a little more time for it to be something that people could read and learn about the NFL and enjoy. But fiction is timeless if you do it right. These books that I've written, Father of Mine and Son of Mine, are set in the early 70s. They are when they are. It doesn't matter when you read them. You can read them 100 years from now, and it still gives you a snapshot of what life was like in the early 70s in small-town West Virginia, where the mob was basically running roughshod over the entire city with impunity and without much police intervention. So that's why I do it, because it's the counterbalance to the crap that I produce every day, and some would say it really is crap again. But it has a very short shelf life, so I balance it out by writing things that ideally have a longer shelf life, and I can write really fast because I've written so much over the years. It's a different kind of writing, but I've taught myself how to do it the same way I taught myself how to write about the NFL. So here we are, 4 years in, 8, 9, 10 manuscripts in, and we're getting them out there as quickly as we can, one at a time. And again, hopefully people will give them a try. All I ever say is give it a try. If you put it down, that's on me. my goal and my objective and my obligation is to craft something that if you read the first word, the first page, the first chapter, you'll want to keep going and then keep going and then keep going.
Well, we wish you luck with that. Congratulations. And now can we talk about the crap you write every day?
Sure. Yeah. As Aaron Rodgers once said, and I hope this is on my tombstone, don't waste your time reading crap like that.
I love your website, by the way, Pro Football Talk. Here in town, we have this big thing going on about stadiums. And the Haslams released a big video of what they would like to build in a suburb of Cleveland out by the airport. It includes all kinds of things, and it also includes a very big price tag that they would like local governments to pick up some of the price tag for, like half of the stadium, and they'll do the rest on the development, all that. The local politicians say, we love this place on the lakefront that nobody's liked since we built it, and we're okay with the idea of sinking $1 billion into it. But they would like the Haslams to sign a 30-year lease, which makes no sense to me. In this day and age in the NFL, is there one appealing option here for an NFL owner as opposed to a municipality? And can you find common ground here?
Well, my general position when it comes to stadiums for NFL teams, and it's not a popular position within the ranks of the 32 owners, but pay for your own damn stadium. You've got the money to do it. The franchises are now worth at least $6 billion each and going up all the time. The rubber meets the road when it comes to this idea of, hey, we're a great part of the fabric of the community and you can have other events here and you should pay for this. Pay for it yourself. And some teams have done that. Stan Kroenke did it in L.A. The Crafts own their stadium in New England. There are benefits to owning your own stadium if you're willing to pay for it. This idea that there's some sort of shared obligation by the taxpayers to pay for it, I think it's a load of bunk, and I think anytime you would ever put that proposition on a ballot, it will fail in any city, because even though in Cleveland, fans are crazy about the Browns, you know what? Most people who live in Cleveland aren't. Most of them. They would say, pay for your own damn stadium. Kansas City went down in flames when they tried to get a sales tax extended. It wasn't even a new sales tax. It was an existing sales tax. They wanted to extend it to renovate Arrowhead Stadium. It crashed and burned. And it's a weird political reality that if you put it on a ballot, the electorate would say no, but there's always a way to back channel it through the existing politicians, because I think no one wants to be the one who is responsible for the team leaving. Now in Cleveland, it's more delicate because a relocation isn't an option. I think this whole Brook Park thing is the leverage to get maximum taxpayer money for a renovation of the current stadium, and then the Haslams can say, all right, fine, we'll give up this pie-in-the-sky idea of having a Brook Park dome, and we'll stay here, and we'll get more money from state local government to pay for the renovation. I really do think this whole thing is a leverage play. I could be wrong, but I feel like they're selling Brook Park hard, and then ultimately they'll turn back and say, fine, good, we'll stay where we are, but you're paying for X percentage of the new and improved downtown stadium.
That's interesting.
So the way that this is looking, from what you've seen, and you've paid attention to the entire league as they've all played these things, is this looking like we are just going to end up renovating the stadium that's downtown? Or do you think this is going to end up in a new stadium somewhere else in downtown?
My gut tells me there's going to be a renovation of the current stadium. Or maybe there'd be a new stadium downtown if you can find a good location. And I don't know that the dome is serious. As I pointed out on X the other night, and this offended some Browns fans, I meant it as a compliment. The idea of Cleveland Browns football being played in a dome is like cooking a steak in a microwave. That's not the way it should be. None of these AFC North teams, and specifically not the Browns, the Steelers, or the Ravens, should be playing in a dome. If any of the four teams scream out dome, it would be the Cincinnati Bengals. So I don't like that. I didn't like it when the Vikings did it. I don't like the idea that the Bears are doing it. I don't like football in a cold weather climate being played in the elements. But if you're going to do it, part of the justification is we can have all these other events that otherwise wouldn't be conducive to open air in January, February, and March, whether it's a Final Four, whether it's concerts or whatever. But I feel like, again, when there isn't that clear leverage of maybe we'll move, and I just don't think you can play that card again in Cleveland less than 30 years after it was played very awkwardly by Art Modell and company back in the mid-90s. The leverage has to be, hey, we really want this, but we'll give this up if you make it worth our while. And it's all a dance. We see the letters being published for the general public to review, and it's a PR game. And I've seen it time and again, and I've seen it in communities throughout the United States as these efforts are made by billionaires, multi-billionaires, and they didn't get that rich by being stupid. If there's a trough of free money out there that you can go eat at to help pay for your stadium, why not do it? I mean, we see people do that all the time with different tax breaks and whatever. If somebody's going to give you free money, you go take it. But I think it's very transparent what's going on here, and I believe my gut feeling is, after looking at this, it's Brook Park Dome is leveraged to get maximum best possible deal at the lakefront, or maybe a brand new stadium if they can find a good spot for it downtown.
Mike Florio joining us from ProFootballTalk.com. What if this happened, Mike? What if they went Bob Kraft, they went Stan Kroenke, and they said, you know what, we really like this Brook Park concept, and we think we can make tons of money doing other things around the stadium as well, and turning this stadium into a destination. We're going to bring in private investors, and we're going to do this ourselves. How do you think that would play with the local governments?
Oh, hell, they'd love it.
Okay.
Pay for your own stadium. How would it play with the NFL, though? That's the problem. It creates a dangerous precedent, because once teams start paying for their own stadiums, you know what happens? Local governments elsewhere start saying, hey, you know, the Haslam's paid for their own damn stadium. You pay for your own damn stadium. They're trying to cling to this as the skyrocketing values of franchises continue. That's the problem. And, you know, look at what they're considering now. They're going to meet in a couple of weeks to adopt a rule where you can sell up to 10% of your team to private equity. So go raise your $2 billion. Sell a chunk of your team that way. This game that they've been playing with fans and communities and taxpayers and politicians forever, there's a chance it's going to blow up soon, because you can't have $10 billion businesses, $10 billion with a B, that are saying, oh, we need the public to share in the burden of this venue, especially when you can turn a profit with a privately owned venue. And I think that's what it comes down to. If you really want Brook Park, if you really want to build a dome there, fine. Pay for it. You keep all the money. You make all the profit, but it's all you. We'll supply the land. We'll supply some infrastructure, but you build the dome, you own the dome, you run the dome, and if you think it can turn a profit, then more power to you.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com. Of course, the author of Son of Mine, which is coming out September 3rd. You can pre-order that anywhere you would get your books and your e-books. Joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Mike, joint practices are starting to go around all around the league right now. Are we going to start seeing more and more of these joint practices instead of preseason games? Because it looks like the league wants to get rid of preseason games, and coaches love these joint practices.
Yeah, this is the fourth season of the 17-3. When I was a kid, it was 14-6, regular season, preseason. In the late 70s, they moved it to 16-4, 17-3, 18-2 is inevitable. And when you look at the reasoning that the commissioner, Roger Goodell, will advance for getting rid of the preseason games and adding regular season games, eventually we're going to 20-0. Eventually. I may be dead by then, but eventually I think that's what we're going to see. So joint practices become the way to simulate the preseason game, because really all the preseason is a glorified scrimmage. That's all it is. Charge full price, although maybe they don't charge full price anymore, but it looks like a game. It feels like a game. Why do I watch it? It's on TV, but it really doesn't matter. I mean, it matters to the individual players who are trying to earn their spots on the roster. Of course, the veterans are like, hey, don't play so well. I don't want you taking my spot on the roster. It's still a zero-sum game with 53 jobs ultimately available. It's just figuring out who's going to have them. But I think we're going to see more and more joint practices. We're going to see fewer preseason games. And eventually the NFL, I believe, will have 20 regular season games and no preseason games whatsoever.
Mike Florio joining us from Pro Football Talk. Earlier this morning, Mike Hall Jr., second-round draft choice of the Browns, arrested by a suburban police department, the Avon Police Department here, on domestic violence charges. They obviously think highly of Mike Hall Jr. This is a bad situation for the Browns. How should they handle this one?
Well, you defer to the league on this one because it's all going to fall under the personal conduct policy. The league may come in and say, depending upon the facts, depending upon the allegations, depending upon whatever the situation is the NFL determines it to be, he could be put on paid leave. The personal conduct policy doesn't get activated until the criminal process is ended, and then the league comes in, does an investigation, imposes discipline if discipline is necessary. As we learned 2 years ago, there's a third party who makes the decision about what the facts are and what the discipline should be. That happened with Deshaun Watson. But if it's particularly heinous, you could have paid leave. If the allegation is heinous, it doesn't matter if you did it or not. They'll tell you, stay home with pay, and they view it as not discipline. I think for guys who play football for a living, it's not like a paid vacation from your job that you hate and you can't wait to get the hell out of there. You want to play football. But that's one option, paid leave. The other option is he's still with the team until the case is resolved, and then they make a final decision. But there's still a lot to be determined. The bottom line is it's a problem. It's an issue. And we'll find out in the coming days and weeks how it gets resolved.
Mike, what are you hearing about Deshaun Watson and how he's looked so far in camp?
Well, I mean, I don't know much more than what's available to anyone else who's paying attention. He's practicing. They're being careful with him. He's cleared for contact, and now it's time for him to ultimately earn that contract. This is the year, and he's the biggest wild card for the Browns, and it makes the Browns a huge wild card. Will he finally justify the massive investment that was made? And we get caught up in the contract and all the hullabaloo about guaranteed deals, 5 years, fully guaranteed. Haslam's got the cold shoulder from other owners for giving him that contract. You know, the thing gets overlooked. Three first-round draft picks that they invested, that they could have had, that could have been young, relatively inexpensive players who helped form the nucleus of a team that is pretty damn good. I mean, look at what they did last year with Deshaun Watson playing only six games. What would they have done if they had those picks, or if they had a return on their investment from Deshaun Watson? I think this is the year. I know he's under contract two more years at $92 million total after this season. At some point, you got to wonder, do they just rip off the Band-Aid and move on if they don't get what they need from Deshaun Watson this season? This season is critical. There's pressure on him. That's the problem with a fully guaranteed five-year deal. On top of everything else that causes pressure for the player, the mere existence of that contract adds to that external sense of you better go out there and prove yourself.
Mike, what if this year for Deshaun Watson and the Browns goes as the last 2 years went for Deshaun Watson and the Browns? In other words, maybe he doesn't play much, and when he does, you're still looking for that guy that you saw in Houston years ago.
I think at some point you got to have the hard conversation. Do we just pay him to go away? Do we do what the Broncos did? It's somewhat different, but look, the Broncos paying the difference between $38 million and $1.21 million, which is what Russell Wilson is getting from the Steelers. It would be $46 million in 2025, $46 million in 2026, less whatever Deshaun Watson would earn elsewhere. Nobody's trading for that contract. Now, they could do kind of like that Brock Osweiler deal that we saw from, what was it, 7, 8 years ago, where the Browns got a second-round pick to take on a contract that was fully guaranteed that the Texans wanted to get out from under. Or you could see a situation where the Browns pay a lot of the money for somebody else to take Deshaun Watson. But I feel like this year it's hard to justify to the fan base and to the team giving it another roll of the dice if this is another season of six games, multiple injuries, player doesn't play like he did. We're 4 years removed from the last time we saw Deshaun Watson play at a high level. 4 years, that is a long time as NFL goes. And confidence is such an important part of a player's overall performance, production, and perception. He's got to turn it around this year, or it's going to be hard. It's going to be very hard to keep. I mean, they're going to have to pay the money anyway. But beyond the money, what is our team? What is this doing to our team and our effort to try to get to a Super Bowl and win it? And I feel like they got a roster that could get there if they could just stabilize the quarterback position. If it's not Deshaun Watson, they got to start thinking about somebody else.
Mike, always a pleasure. We thank you for being with us.
Thanks, guys.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And again, his new book, Son of Mine, coming out in September. You heard what Mike said. Pay for your own damn stadium. And I didn't know that the word damn preceded stadium every time the word stadium came up. Browns fans, what would you think of that? As Mike said, he would think, hey, great, that's fantastic. Except the NFL owners might not agree with that. If the Haslam said, we're paying for this whole thing, Would that play? Would you be happy with the idea of a dome stadium? 216-474-0092. We'd love your thoughts on that and more. Hody with a 2020.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm going to read this directly from what Daryl has on our website. I highly recommend reading the whole article up there, though. According to the police report obtained by 92.3 The Fan, Hall and his girlfriend, who have an 11-month-year-old daughter, have been living together for 6 months, got into an argument over the cost of a dental procedure for the woman's 5-year-old, fathered by a different man. The report said that Hall looked at messages on his girlfriend's phone to confirm her assertion that the father could not pay for it. After Hall's girlfriend locked the phone, that's when Hall became angry. The police report said that Hall started gathering belongings and throwing them outside. Hall allegedly pushed her into a door, causing damage to the door frame. Hall also punched the door of a second floor bedroom before he retrieved one of his 2 handguns and pressed the firearm against her temple and threatened, "I will end it all. I don't care."
Okay. If you would like to read all of that, Daryl has it on our website, 923thefan.com. Obviously, that's disturbing.
Extremely.
So there's that situation. Again, the Browns released a statement earlier today. They're aware of the incident, and they're in the process of gathering information. They'll have no further comment at this time.
And again, that's according to their police report. And I'm reading right off of Daryl Ryder, 92.3 The Fan. If you want more details, please go on our website, read his piece there. He does a great job laying everything out that took place here. This is ugly.
It's real disturbing, and it doesn't seem like it's on a path that's going to end well for my call. So we'll see, and we'll see what this turns into. But the second-round pick of the Browns from Northeast Ohio and Ohio State, obviously in big, big trouble in this situation. We've talked about the ramifications for the Browns from a football standpoint. Okay, that's been taken care of. There's plenty of guys that they can play defensive tackle. Probably none with the potential and the youth of Mike Hall, but he has put that future in jeopardy. And we'll see how it plays out. Either long-term, short-term, he's not going to be on the football field.
It's what we have heard and said through a good chunk of time, which is I don't think we will see Mike Hall for a good period of time play football for the Browns. But the Browns are going to let everything play out, and I don't think we are going to expect any kind of move until the league makes a move first. I think the league will have to suspend him or do anything like that before the Browns are doing anything. So right now, we all just kind of wait in limbo. Just a sickening situation from what it sounds like, according to the police report.
And again, details, Daryl has them on our website, 923thefan.com. Go get all the deets you want. And Daryl did a great job jumping all over that and taking care of that information for us. We just had Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk on the show, and we asked Mike about the pressing issue otherwise with the Browns, and that's the stadium situation right now as the Browns are getting ready for the season. And I love Mike's thought. Have them pay for their damn stadium. And Mike said damn stadium every time he said stadium. So
yeah.
I guess that's part of it now. So let's do that. That was funny.
I'm in.
I think that would be great. I also think it's perhaps a possibility. Mike thought they're using it as leverage to get the stadium renovated downtown. That could perhaps be the case. I have the feeling that the Haslams aren't just saying they want to develop a big thing around a stadium just for the sake of saying it. I think they fell in love with what they've seen with other places that have done that. And that was done in New England with Foxborough. It's been done in Dallas. And maybe that's something that they are truly interested in. And if that's the case, maybe they, Dan, do end up paying for it themselves or bringing in other investors.
A little bit of news as well. Yep. ESPN sources, Vikings rookie first-round pick J.J. McCarthy expected to undergo knee surgery that will determine how much time he will be sidelined. McCarthy's talked about knee soreness over the weekend, underwent an MRI Monday night, so he will have surgery. There are rumblings as well. It's involving a meniscus. We will see from there. So, of course, Vikings in town for joint practices. We will not see J.J. McCarthy at the joint practices.
Okay. And if he has knee surgery involving a meniscus, he might be out a while, which gives Sam Darnold a real chance to be a starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Ian Rappaport is the one saying it's a meniscus issue.
Okay.
So, yep. All right. On the stadium front of this stuff, look, we all want to live in this world where we've said it forever. Owners should pay for their own damn stadiums. We've said that for as long as I could possibly remember.
Is it now a show rule that we have to say damn stadium?
No, because that doesn't really fit. We try to be for all audiences, Jeff, and PG only allows you to use that word a couple times.
All right, then we'll drop damn and we'll just say stadium now.
It may come out every so often, okay. But you know,
we'll just say stadium now.
I'd like to have a couple words that are used for forcefulness every so often to get your attention, you know? So we've all said that forever. Like that has always been this utopian ideal that have the owners pay for their own darn stadium. Like what?
And it very rarely ever happens.
And Mike laid it out perfectly when he said, if they do that, it sets a precedent for the rest of the NFL to no longer ask these cities, these counties, these states to have to chip in for the stadiums. It's the great line that I was once told, which was that if you were walking down the street with Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos and you saw a $5 bill sitting in the gutter, the two of them would shove you into the nearest building to fight over that by themselves. You don't become a billionaire on accident. And part of that is knowing how to dodge these different things to make other people help supplement how you make money. So I don't blame the Haslams for wanting to do this. This is the game that we are all playing. As Mike laid out oh so well, if we were to survey all of the taxpayers in this region and said, are you for giving taxpayer money to build a stadium? All of them would have the same answer. No, what are you, nuts? What do I get out of that? What kind of money do I get for that? Do I see my taxes go down if we build that? Are we sharing in the profits that involve this taxes? How do I benefit from having this big old building standing there? That's what you'd hear from all of them. And all of those are proper concerns. So, yeah, but the problem is we all know how the game is played, which is that these guys go to the counties, they go to the states, they go to the state, and the cities and the states and all that stuff go, well, we don't want to do that. And then they go, whoa, we'll move. And then all of a sudden, everything gets moving. So we all know how this game is played, sadly.
Tim is in Bedford. Tim.
How are you, Tim?
Good morning, guys. I think back over 30 years ago, and you had a politician sat down and had a poker game with a business owner, and he called his bluff, and Modell pulled up stakes, and the politicians have been to blame for this from day one. If that would have been, if Mike White would have played that whole game different, we would have lost the Browns and all this other stuff coming back. And I got to tell you, as soon as that 176 Acres were mentioned months ago, and that's a done deal. As soon as they dropped that little nugget, the seed has been planted. And I think the people in this town, the Browns fans, been a season ticket holder for 70 years, and they, I'll tell you what, I've been to Dome Stadiums. I've been to facilities that they did it right. And when we brought the Browns back, we were under time constraints as far as the stadium. The stadium was terrible for creature comfort. It's just terrible. And sight lines are great. Good place to watch a game. Getting in and out. But the whole 9 yards, the whole experience, go to the concourse, go to the bathrooms. I mean, you're going through the food lines. It's just a joke. The way they set it up. But they had to have a stadium built so they can get the sound staff. You know, so do what? Pay for them? For Aslan's pay? Absolutely pay. Let them reap the benefits. They're putting the cash down. They're putting every penny down. Let them get every penny out. And you know it's going to be first class that way.
All right, Tim, thank you very much. Tough phone line there, Tim, but we were glad you were able to get your thoughts out there. Damon is in Cleveland. Damon, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yep, you got it.
I don't understand why having an attraction like that stadium in Brook Park would be a bad thing for the city. I mean, and I hate to sound like this because I'm like in my 40s, but I think for the younger generations of Browns fans, we don't really care about being outside as much as maybe the tradition was back then. We would rather be in comfort and have places to spend our money that we enjoy, not have to suffer through spending our money. So for me, it's they should do a dome. I don't think the Haslams are bluffing. I definitely think that if the city of Cleveland does not want to help with this, they're going to do it themselves. Damon, I don't think this is a dream. I think they're just letting us know we're moving the stadium to Brook Park.
Damon, thank you very much. 216-474-0092. Mike Florio says, pay for it yourself. Would you be okay with that, Browns fans? That would mean a dome stadium in Brook Park. Would that work? It's Baskin and Phelps here on the... Now, hello, D.
What's happening, Daryl?
Hello, boys.
Daryl's been all over the situation with Mike Call Jr. and his coverage, his report. Read it on 92.3thefan.com. So, Daryl, this breaks this morning. And first of all, you've got the latest in the details on this. Correct me if I'm wrong. He's under arrest right now, has been booked by the Avon Police Department.
Yes,
is he in custody or was he released?
He's scheduled to appear in court today.
Okay. If you're the Browns, you're thinking what right now about him on the football field? Or can you not even go there yet?
Yeah, I don't think you can go there yet. Obviously, the allegations outlined in the narrative that was attached to this police report, no other way to describe than horrifying what he is accused of. But these are accusations. This is an alleged incident. A police investigation, obviously, is underway. He has been charged with domestic violence. He's going to appear in court if he's not done so already. Avon Municipal Court today on that charge and be arraigned. But again, what is alleged to have occurred last night at his home in Avon, where he was there with his girlfriend, their 11-month-old daughter, his girlfriend's daughter, 5-year-old daughter from another man, and his girlfriend's mother was also there, and his girlfriend's mother is the one that ultimately called police, initially hung up. Police called back and were able to speak with her, and then Hall allegedly locked them out of the home. When police arrived, found them outside the home. He had left the premises. They gathered the details of what allegedly took place, and then this morning Hall was arrested.
All right, so that you just you clarified something that didn't make sense in the police report. The mother of his child was there, and her mother was there as well. So
correct.
Okay, the grandmother of his child was there.
Correct.
Okay, and then the two kids as well. So that's
yes.
Okay. Not much to say about the incident other than you're right. It's horrifying. It's bad news. Precedent says the Browns have been an organization that has always given people a second chance. Man, this one sounds pretty serious, Daryl. I mean, the way this is laying out sounds like something that's more serious than some of the other situations that they've given people second chances from before.
Anytime a weapon is involved and an alleged threat while using that weapon, which is alleged in this incident, Hall was accused of not only punching a hole in a door, throwing the alleged victim into another door, causing damage, which police outlined in the report they observed upon inspection of the residence. You know, he was accused of retrieving one of two firearms and, you know, pressing it against his girlfriend and threatening to kill her. Again, these are allegations. This is what is alleged in this narrative, in this police report that we obtained from the Avon Police Department. But that is what's in there. Again, the details are horrifying. He is also accused of dragging her out of the front door and across the porch and down to the end of the driveway by her feet. The mother told Avon police that she witnessed Hall strike her daughter on the head with a baby bottle, drag her outside by her arms. I'm quoting the report here right now just so people understand. The mother alleges that Hall choked her daughter by the neck, pushed her head through a wall, and broke open a bedroom door. So these are the allegations that have been made during this incident that occurred last night. They're very serious. Again, they're very horrifying. And, you know, I don't know. We know the Browns were quick to release a statement when almost immediately, because word had been floating around all morning that something involving Hall had occurred. And the I believe it was Zach Jackson was the first to officially report this incident. I was aware of it. I was, you know, looking into it and trying to gather facts before I put anything out there. And but the Browns were Johnny on a spot with a statement. And you know, they just basically said what they usually do in these cases: we're aware of the incident, you know, and that you know, they're gathering more information and things like that. So that's where we're at right now.
So Daryl and our Brown or Cleveland sports beat reporter, I should say, Daryl Ryder, joining us, and of course he's powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. So Daryl, what's next for the Browns here?
Well, I mean, what's next is the legal process obviously needs to play out. The hearing has to take place today. You know, whatever arrangements for his release get made by Hall's not only Hall but his legal representation here. There is a legal component that needs to play out today. He's not been convicted of a crime, so I anticipate that the Browns are obviously they're upset by this. There's no question about that. But I would anticipate the Browns will let this legal process play out, and you know, before they you know, do anything. Obviously, Hall would be subject to the NFL's conduct policy here, too. So very real possibility that even just with allegations, Hall could be subject to league discipline here as a result of this alleged incident.
All right, Daryl. So that's where this is right now. Well, I'm going to take it to football. I know that sounds a little callous, but you know, we're a sports talk station. The Browns are a football team. Mike Hall Jr. is a defensive tackle. Are they deep enough at defensive tackle that they're comfortable with their second-round pick not being able to go, if that turns out to be the case, where he's not able to play at least at the start of the season?
Well, I mean, from a football standpoint, setting this situation aside, you know, Dalvin Tomlinson is still on PUP. Shelby Harris came back yesterday, so good sign there. Zadarius Smith has been banged up a little bit up front. You got Mo Hurst in the mix there. You got Quentin Jefferson, excuse me, in the mix there. Let's not forget Siaki Ika, Alex Wright, Isaiah Thomas, a defensive end. I'm just trying to remember all these defensive linemen they have. Obo Okoronkwo, but I mean, in the middle, you know, assuming Dalvin's able to come back and healthy here, then, you know, I think that they would be fine on the depth chart. If I remember correctly, I think Hall was like listed third. He got reps in the second half of Saturday's preseason opener against Green Bay. I think he played around 25, 26 snaps, something like that, if memory serves me correctly. So from a pure football standpoint right now, Jeff, I would say, yeah, they've got some bodies there. And you know, from a football standpoint, he wasn't going to be a starter. Maybe he was going to be a rotational guy. He was having a good camp. You know, certainly looked good on the football field, but none of that really matters right now as this legal situation plays out.
So joint practice is going on for the Browns this week. They'll start up tomorrow. Deshaun Watson, according to Kevin Stefanski, is going to take the majority of the snaps. How much of what you are about to see, Darrell, in joint practices are we going to be able to take away about how this offense will look going into 24?
Well, we should be able to see a little bit just because, as Kevin Stefanski pointed out yesterday, Minnesota does things a little different. Their defense looks a little different than what the Browns do. Minnesota's offense is different as well. So I think there'll be a lot you'll be able to glean from these joint practices. Obviously, they're going to try and protect each other. You know, they're not coming in to beat each other up. This is about getting work in. But we're going to see a lot of first-team offense in one-on-one, seven-on-sevens, and 11-on-11 work in these practices. It's basically the way I look at these joint practices is almost like a preseason game cut in half, right? First half is Wednesday, second half is Thursday, and they are working, going to actually do things in these practices you don't necessarily always get to do in preseason games, or that you're guaranteed to be able to do in preseason games. And that's situational football. So I'm talking, you know, third downs, down and distance, red zone, coming out from the shadow of your own goalposts, you know, things like that. Obviously, special teams is going to be really, really important as both of these football teams work on the new kickoff rules, right? I mean, it was almost a little humorous. Kevin Stefanski telling us Saturday after the game about the kickoff. So that wasn't supposed to happen. We didn't want touchbacks. We wanted them returning because I wanted to see us cover. And that was a little amusing to me because, earlier in the week, Bubba Ventrone said, yeah, I'm not showing anything. You're not going to see anything on the new kickoff during the preseason. And then Stefanski comes out and says, yeah, I wanted us to cover those kickoffs. I didn't want touchbacks there. So that was a little interesting. But, there is a tremendous amount of work for the Browns to get done with the Vikings in these next two practices, which I'm sorry to say, and it basically renders Saturday's preseason game somewhat moot. You know what I mean? Unless you're on the back end of the roster fighting for a job for either of these teams, because again, the first teamers again get their work in on Wednesday and Thursday.
Were you surprised at all to hear Kevin Stefanski say yesterday Deshaun will play against Seattle?
No, because I feel like that was like a Captain Obvious moment. Like, right? I mean, he's not gonna play against Minnesota. That's obvious. And you got to get him some work before the regular season with the live bullets going a little bit. Now the question becomes, Jeff, how much does he play against Seattle? And that I don't have an answer for you right now. My take on it is he needs to play at least two series, a full quarter of football, maybe into the second quarter, depending how things go, right? I mean, if he comes out, lights it up, right? Touchdown on open, whatever. Okay, maybe you feel a little better. But I feel like he needs live game reps because I'm not really concerned about his health right now. And what I mean by that is his arm is fine. In my view, just based on what I've observed, the arm is fine. The timing, the internal clock in the pocket, those things need some work. And for me, the only way he's going to get that work this week against the Vikings in the joint practices, and then the following week when they go to Seattle for that midnight affair Eastern time with the Seahawks.
Darrell, thank you very much. Busy day for you. Great work. You can read it at 92.3thefan.com. Darrell with all of the latest news on the Mike Hall Jr. situation. Thank you, Darrell.
Thank you for doing this.
And Darrell presented by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. You heard what Darrell had to say about the Mike Hall situation, about the team, the way it's looking football-wise at defensive tackle if Mike's not out there on the field, and it certainly sounds like that's a long shot. And we've been talking stadium, too. We're going to continue it right here on 92.3 The Fan. Now, hello, D.
What's happening, Darrell?
Hello, boys.
Darrell's been all over the situation with Mike Hall Jr. and his coverage, his report. Read it on 92.3thefan.com. So, Darrell, this breaks this morning, and first of all, you've got the latest in the details on this. Correct me if I'm wrong. He's under arrest right now, has been booked by the Avon Police Department.
Yes,
is he in custody or was he released?
He's scheduled to appear in court today.
Okay. If you're the Browns, you're thinking what right now about him on the football field? Or can you not even go there yet?
Yeah, I don't think you can go there yet. Obviously, the allegations outlined in the narrative that was attached to this police report, no other way to describe than horrifying what he is accused of. But these are accusations. This is an alleged incident. A police investigation, obviously, is underway. He has been charged with domestic violence. He's going to appear in court if he's not done so already. Avon Municipal Court today on that charge and be arraigned. But again, what is alleged to have occurred last night at his home in Avon, where he was there with his girlfriend, their 11-month-old daughter, his girlfriend's daughter, 5-year-old daughter from another man, and his girlfriend's mother was also there. And his girlfriend's mother is the one that ultimately called police, initially hung up. Police called back and were able to speak with her. And then Hall allegedly locked them out of the home. When police arrived, found them outside the home. He had left the premises. They gathered the details of what allegedly took place. And then this morning, Hall was arrested.
All right. So that you just you clarified something that didn't make sense in the police report. The mother of his child was there, and her mother was there as well. So
correct.
Okay. The grandmother of his child was there.
Correct.
Okay. And then the two kids as well. So that's
yes.
Okay. Not much to say about the incident other than you're right. It's horrifying. It's bad news. Precedent says the Browns have been an organization that has always given people a second chance. Man, this one sounds pretty serious, Daryl. I mean, the way this is laying out Sounds like something that's more serious than some of the other situations that they've given people second chances from before.
Anytime a weapon is involved and an alleged threat while using that weapon, which is alleged in this incident, Hall was accused of not only punching a hole in a door, throwing the alleged victim into another door, causing damage, which police outlined in the report they observed upon inspection of the residence. He was accused of retrieving one of two firearms and pressing it against his girlfriend and threatening to kill her. Again, these are allegations. This is what is alleged in this narrative, in this police report that we obtained from the Avon Police Department. But that is what's in there. Again, the details are horrifying. He is also accused of dragging her out of the front door and across the porch and down to the end of the driveway by her feet. The mother told Avon police that she witnessed Hall strike her daughter on the head with a baby bottle, drag her outside by her arms. I'm quoting the report here right now just so people understand. The mother alleges that Hall choked her daughter by the neck, pushed her head through a wall, and broke open a bedroom door. So these are the allegations that have been made during this incident that occurred last night. They're very serious. Again, they're very horrifying. And, I don't know. We know the Browns were quick to release a statement when almost immediately, because word had been floating around all morning that something involving Hall had occurred. And I believe it was Zach Jackson was the first to officially report this incident. I was aware of it. I was, looking into it and trying to gather facts before I put anything out there. But the Browns were Johnny on a spot with a statement. They just basically said what they usually do in these cases. We're aware of the incident, they're gathering more information and things like that. So that's where we're at right now.
So Daryl and our Brown or Cleveland sports beat reporter, I should say, Daryl Ryder, joining us, and of course he's powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. So Daryl, what's next for the Browns here?
Well, I mean, what's next is the legal process obviously needs to play out. The hearing has to take place today. you know, whatever arrangements for his release get made by Hall's, not only Hall, but his legal representation here. There is a legal component that needs to play out today. He's not been convicted of a crime. I anticipate that the Browns are, obviously they're upset by this. There's no question about that. But I would anticipate the Browns will let this legal process play out. And before they do anything. Obviously, Hall would be subject to the NFL's conduct policy here too. So very real possibility that even just with allegations, Hall could be subject to league discipline here as a result of this alleged incident.
All right, Daryl. So that's where this is right now. I'm going to take it to football. I know that sounds a little callous, but you know, we're a sports talk station. The Browns are a football team. Mike Hall Jr. is a defensive tackle. Are they deep enough at defensive tackle that they're comfortable with their second round pick not being able to go if that turns out to be the case, where he's not able to play at least at the start of the season?
Well, I mean, from a football standpoint, setting this situation aside, Dalvin Tomlinson is still on PUP. Shelby Harris came back yesterday, so good sign there. Zadarius Smith has been banged up a little bit up front. You got Mo Hurst in the mix there. You got Quentin Jefferson, in the mix there. Let's not forget Siaki Ika, Alex Wright. Isaiah Thomas, defensive end. I'm just trying to remember all these defensive linemen they have. Obo Okoronkwo. But I mean, in the middle, assuming Dalvin's able to come back and healthy here, then I think that they would be fine on the depth chart. If I remember correctly, I think Hall was like listed third. He got reps in the second half of Saturday's preseason opener against Green Bay. I think he played around 25, 26 snaps, something like that, if memory serves me correctly. So from a pure football standpoint right now, Jeff, I would say, yeah, they've got some bodies there. And from a football standpoint, he wasn't going to be a starter. Maybe he was going to be a rotational guy. He was having a good camp. Yeah. Certainly looked good on the football field, but none of that really matters right now as this legal situation plays out.
So joint practice is going on for the Browns this week. They'll start up tomorrow. Deshaun Watson, according to Kevin Stefanski, is going to take the majority of the snaps. How much of what you are about to see, Daryl, in joint practices are we going to be able to take away about how this offense will look going into 24?
Well, we should be able to see a little bit just because, as Kevin Stefanski pointed out yesterday, Minnesota does things a little different. Their defense looks a little different than what the Browns do. Minnesota's offense is different as well. So I think there'll be a lot you'll be able to glean from these joint practices. Obviously, they're going to try and protect each other. You know, they're not coming in to beat each other up. This is about getting work in. But we're going to see a lot of first-team offense in one-on-one, seven-on-sevens, and 11-on-11 work in these practices. It's basically, the way I look at these joint practices is almost like a preseason game cut in half, right? First half is Wednesday, second half is Thursday, and they are working, going to actually do things in these practices you don't necessarily always get to do in preseason games, or that you're guaranteed to be able to do in preseason games. And that's situational football. So I'm talking, you know, third downs, down and distance, red zone, coming out from the shadow of your own goalposts, things like that. Obviously, special teams is going to be really, really important as both of these football teams work on the new kickoff rules, right? I mean, it was almost a little humorous. Kevin Stefanski telling us Saturday after the game about the kickoff. So that wasn't supposed to happen. We didn't want touchbacks. We wanted them returning because I wanted to see us cover. And that was a little amusing to me because, earlier in the week, Bubba Ventrone said, yeah, I'm not showing anything. You're not going to see anything on the new kickoff during the preseason. And then Stefanski comes out and said, yeah, I wanted us to cover those kickoffs. I didn't want touchbacks there. So that was a little interesting. But, there is a tremendous amount of work for the Browns to get done with the Vikings in these next two practices, which I'm sorry to say, and it basically renders Saturday's preseason game somewhat moot. You know what I mean? Unless you're on the back end of the roster fighting for a job for either of these teams, because again, the first teamers again get their work in on Wednesday and Thursday.
Were you surprised at all to hear Kevin Stefanski say yesterday Deshaun will play against Seattle?
No, because I feel like that was like a Captain Obvious moment. Like, like, duh, right? I mean, he's not gonna play against Minnesota. That's obvious, and you got to get him some work before the regular season with the live bullets going a little bit. Now the question becomes, Jeff, how much does he play against Seattle? And that I don't have an answer for you right now. My take on it is he needs to play at least two series, a full quarter of football, maybe into the second quarter, depending how things go, right? I mean, if he comes out, lights it up, right? Touchdown on open, whatever. Okay, maybe you feel a little better. But I feel like he needs live game reps because I'm not really concerned about his health right now. And what I mean by that is his arm is fine. In my view, just based on what I've observed, the arm is fine. The timing, the internal clock in the pocket, those things need some work. And for me, the only way he's going to get that work this week against the Vikings in the joint practices, and then the following week when they go to Seattle for that midnight affair Eastern time with the Seahawks.
Daryl, thank you very much. Busy day for you. Great work. You can read it at 92.3thefan.com. Daryl with all of the latest news on the Mike Hall Jr. situation. Thank you, Daryl.
Thank you, guys.
And Daryl presented by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. You heard what Daryl had to say about the Mike Hall situation, about the team, the way it's looking football-wise at defensive tackle if Mike's not out there on the field, and it certainly sounds like that's a long shot. And we've been talking stadium, too. We're going to continue it right here on 92.3 The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.